Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 7, Text 14. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Kai Pishta Poru Boyahasana Singarupam Kritva Brahmad Rukuti Damstra Karala Vraktram Daityendra Mashu Gadayavi Patanta Marad Urao Napatya Vidadara Nakai Svarantam. Personality of Godhead assumed the incarnation of Nrisimhadeva in order to vanquish the great fears of the demigods. He killed the king of the demons, Hiranyakashipu, who challenged the Lord with a club in his hand by placing the demons on his thighs and piercing him with his nails, rolling his eyebrows in anger and showing his fearful teeth and mouth. Purport. The history of Hiranyakashipu and his great devotee son, Prahlad Maharaj, is narrated in the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Hiranyakashipu became very powerful by material achievements and thought himself to be immortal by the grace of Brahmaji. Brahmaji declined to award him the benediction of immortality because he himself is not an immortal being. But Hiranyakashipu derived Brahmaji's benediction in a roundabout way, almost equal in becoming an immortal being. Hiranyakashipu was sure that he would not be killed by any man or demigod, or by any kind of known weapon, nor would he die in day or night. The Lord, however, assumed the incarnation of half man and half lion, which was beyond the imagination of a materialistic demon like Hiranyakashipu. And thus, keeping pace with the benediction of Brahmaji, the Lord killed him. He killed him on his lap, so that he was killed neither on the land, nor on the water, nor in the sky. The demon was pierced by Nrisimha's nails, which were beyond the human weapons imagined by Hiranyakashipu. The literal meaning of Hiranyakashipu is one who is after gold and soft bedding, the ultimate aim of all materialistic men. Such demoniac men, who have no relationship with God, gradually become puffed up by material acquisitions and begin to challenge the authority of the Supreme Lord and torture those who are devotees of the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj happened to be the son of Hiranyakashipu. Because the boy was a great devotee, his father tortured him in the best of his ability. In his extreme situation, the Lord assumed the incarnation of Nrisimhadeva just to finish the enemy of the demigods. The Lord killed Hiranyakashipu in a manner beyond the demon's imagination. Materialistic plans of godless demons are always frustrated by the all-powerful Lord. Om Jnanatimarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Pancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa shindu bhayevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, just a short review. Each review will become shorter. So, these are Brahma explaining to Narada about the creation, which is being told by Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Prickett in relationship to Maharaj Prickett's question about the creation. Sukadeva Goswami referred to a discussion that took place in history between Narada Muni and Lord Brahma about the creation. And in Lord Brahma's discussion and explanation of the creation, which he explained in quite detail, his conclusion is that ultimately he can know something about the Lord, but the Lord is inconceivable. And because the Lord is inconceivable, the Lord can only be known by his mercy, which comes to one who becomes dependent on the Lord and performs devotional service. So therefore, Lord Brahma began to explain. Therefore, his conclusion was, therefore, we should offer our humble obeisances to the Supreme Lord. We should surrender to the Supreme Lord who incarnates in different, he comes in different incarnations. And therefore his ultimate conclusion is that to understand the Lord fully, one has to engage in the process of Shravana and Kirtana, in chanting and hearing. And therefore he began to explain the Lord's incarnations. Lord's incarnations are basic in two categories. As the Purusha avatars, he creates the world, because incarnations means the Supreme Lord comes into this world. He incarnates, he makes himself seen, he manifests himself in this world. He manifests himself as the creator of the world, the Purusha avatars, and he enters into the world. Although there's two different types of incarnations, they have the same function. And the function is to enlighten the conditioned souls. Creation is for enlightening the conditioned souls. When the Lord comes into creation, it's for enlightening the conditioned soul. And therefore, the incarnations come to regulate the creation and the society within creation for the purpose of self-realization. And also, by doing that, they perform wonderful activities which give the conditioned souls a subject matter for hearing about Krishna. And self-realization is based, our process of self-realization is based on focusing our consciousness on Krishna, which invokes within us attachment for him. That invokes within us attachment for him. This is the process of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means to become pure. And what is pure? Pure means when something is pure, it means like pure water is water before anything else is added. It's the original thing. So what is the pure nature of the living entity, the original thing? The original thing is that we're part and parcel of God and we're meant for his service. So pure means to come to the point of bhakti or devotion, because that is the constitutional position of the living entity, to serve Krishna. So this is the process of getting that bhakti. We have to focus our consciousness on Krishna. Whatever we focus, if we focus our consciousness on something that is attractive, we become attached. So if we focus our consciousness on the all-attractive Krishna, we become attached. Attachment to Krishna is called rati or bhakti. And that's the goal of life. Prema Pumartha Mahan. The Maha Artha, the greatest artha or goal, is to develop attraction for Krishna. And therefore, Krishna comes in different incarnations so that we can hear his lila or his pastimes and therefore think of him and therefore become attached to him. And that's how bhakti or devotion comes into the heart, by this process of hearing. And this is the subject matter for hearing. So many different incarnations we're reading about. And the other thing also, what we can say, this is what the Srimad Bhagavatam is. The Srimad Bhagavatam is a history of God, and a history of God as he comes into this world in his various incarnations. So here we're seeing now this story of Hiranyakashipu, of Nisringadeva, the Lord appearing as half lion, half man, which is the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, they give us also various instructions that we need to advance in spiritual life. So Prabhupada here describes materialistic plans of godless demons are always frustrated by the all-powerful Lord. In other words, there's two ways in which you become Krishna conscious, directly and indirectly. Directly means you hear how to practice devotional service, and indirectly means you hear what to avoid. This is also rules and regulations. Rules is what you do. Regulations is what you don't do. This is the Abhideya Tattva. Abhideya Tattva means the truth about how to practice Krishna consciousness. Later in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, this is going to be described by Lord Krishna to Lord Brahma in four verses at the beginning of creation. It's the seed of the Bhagavatam, the nutshell verses of the Bhagavatam. One of those verses describes Abhideya Tattva, how to practice Krishna consciousness. And it specifically says we should search for this. What is this? This is love of Godhead. Directly and indirectly, everywhere and anywhere. So Prabhupada explains very clearly that directly means direct devotional service. Indirect means Vanashram and the various religious principles we practice to protect our devotional service. Directly also means direct devotional service or what to do, and indirectly means what not to do. So by these stories, for example, like the story of Nisringadeva, how he kills Hiranyakashipu, you see the impossibility of the conditioned soul to fulfill the desire to be the Lord and Master, because that's a position he cannot have by his constitution. So we saw in the story of Hiranyakashipu how he tried in every which way to make a plan to control this world. And ultimately controlling the world means controlling death. But somehow or other he was frustrated by the... Because he said he would not killed by any weapon, so he's killed by the claws. By not a human being or an animal, so it was half man, half animal. Not in the day or night, so he was killed at dusk. So we see that pastime. So text 15. The leader of the elephants, whose leg was attacked in a river by a crocodile of superior strength, was much aggrieved. Taking a lotus flower in his trunk, he addressed the Lord, saying, O original enjoyer, Lord of the universe, O deliverer as famous as a place of pilgrimage, all are purified simply by hearing your holy name, which is worthy to be chanted. So the Supreme Lord appears for his devotee. That's actually the main reason he appears. Because this Vinashayatra Dushkritam, or killing the demons, can be done by his agents of material nature. And Pritasadunam also by others. But he comes personally to reciprocate with his devotee. So we see many pastimes where the Supreme Lord comes to protect his devotee. That's actually our bhakti. Because we see Krishna as the Lord and Master. So the bhakti that one has, there's a flavor of devotion. Just like a mother loves a child, but what's the flavor of devotion? The flavor of devotion is mercy. Without me, you will die. But the flavor of love of a child to the mother or a servant to the master is without you, I will die. That's our bhakti for Krishna. Our bhakti for Krishna is that he's our protector, he's our shelter. Our bhakti is that we're dependent on him. If you want to think of bhakti for Krishna, we have to think of what is the love of a child for the parent or mother. Why does a child love the mother? Because when he was young and he was completely dependent, the mother was there, the mother was feeding him, the mother was taking care of him. So think of the love you would have for your mother. I don't know, so many dysfunctional families that people don't remember. But if you think of the love that you had for some guardian, protector, what is that love? That love is, they helped me so much when I was in need. And that's our love for Krishna. And therefore, unless we become humble and realize our need, we cannot develop love of Godhead. That's why Kunti wanted calamitous situations. Because calamitous situations mean that your environment is moving beyond your control. And therefore you give up that sense that you're independent of God. You see that you're completely dependent. And she liked that because when you are dependent, then God is there. That's natural. When you're young and incapable, your mother's always there. When you get older and you're independent, she's not as much protecting and not as much caring. And even her love is not as great. When you see the love of a mother for a child that's 4, and you see the same love of the mother for that child when the child's 15, it's not as great. Why? Because she can't give as much mercy. The child is more capable. So Krishna's love for us, and we experience his love and protection most when we're in a very dependent mood. And therefore we see when we try to control this world, we try to be independent, we get smashed again and again and again and again. Because Krishna is bringing us into that platform where we can experience his love and protection. So here, this crocodile, this elephant is so powerful. Gajendra, he finds himself in the river where he's attacked by this crocodile. And then he, because of his past deeds, Sukriti, in his artha means greatly aggrieved, in his distress, he approaches Krishna. Therefore, Prabhupada quotes the verse 7:16. There are 4 types of people who approach Krishna. Chaturvidha bhajanti mam jana sukritano jana. Arti artarto jigyasa gyaninas paratarshava. There's 4 types of people that approach Krishna due to their sukriti. It's not pure devotional service because they're approaching not to give Krishna pleasure but to get one of their needs met. Therefore, it's not even at the platform of Kanishtha Adhikari. Because Kanishtha Adhikari means your objective is to please Krishna. You just have weak faith and don't have knowledge. The precursor to the minimum qualification to practicing sadhana bhakti, the precursor is some sukriti. Somehow or other in devotional service, you've given charity to a devotee, you serve the devotee, and therefore there's something in your heart, and in your distress, you will approach Krishna. So he called Krishna's name. And because Krishna's name is none different than him. And that was due to his past good deeds, due to his sukriti. And he addressed the Lord, and so many nice names here. He calls the Supreme Lord Adi Purusha. He's the first enjoyer, the original Purusha. Purusha means enjoyer. So he's the original enjoyer, and the devotee knows that, and therefore he tries to serve Krishna. And he addresses him, this is the term, Akila Loka Nata, the Lord of the universe, and therefore also the Lord of the elephants and the Lord of Gajendra. And therefore, he's the protector of everyone. And a Prabhupada said, a pure devotee is given first preference because of his full dependence. Whereas the person who denies the existence of the Lord and declares himself the Lord is called Asura. And as such, he is given protection by the strength of limited power subject to the sanction of the Lord. In other words, when you depend on Krishna, then you have his strength and his protection. And again, just like the child, if he's dependent on his father, he's protected by the strength of his father. So therefore, the elephant, by his sukriti, said, Akila Lokanatha, the complete controller of the universe, you please protect me. And then he addressed the Lord as Tirtha Shrava, or a place of pilgrimage. Because you go to a place of pilgrimage to be purified from your sinful reactions. But when you chant the holy name of the Lord, that's the best way to become pure of your sinful reactions. And the Lord is not different than his name. And he called the Lord Shravana Mangala, means good comes by hearing. And that's why the Supreme Lord appears. He appears on the earth and does activities to create subject matter to hear about him. We're reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the pastimes and history of the Lord appearing in this world. And we're becoming purified of it. This is the process of purification. Therefore, Shravana Mangala, it's so auspicious to hear about the Lord. Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. Nashta means destroyed. Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. All that is Abhadra. This word here is Mangala. Mangala means auspicious. Bhadra means auspicious. Abhadra means inauspicious. All that's inauspicious. Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Seva. When you serve the Bhagavat, the book Bhagavat and the devotee Bhagavat, and there's no difference. Because the person Bhagavat speaks about the book Bhagavat, and the book Bhagavat is about the person Bhagavat who speaks about it's about the devotee who speaks about God. So there's no difference. And therefore, it is concluded, therefore, the holy name of the Lord and topics and relate are always worth hearing. And therefore, he is called here in the verse, Namadeya, a one whose holy name is worth chanting. So such wonderful pastimes will be told in the Bhagavatam for our purification. The personality of Godhead, after hearing the elephant's plea, felt that the elephant needed his immediate help, for he was in great distress. Thus at once the Lord appeared there on the wings of the king of birds, Garuda, fully equipped with his weapon, the wheel Chakra. With the wheel he cut to pieces the mouth of the crocodile to save the elephant, and he delivered the elephant by lifting him by his trunk. So the Supreme Lord here is dressed as Hari, but also he's described as Aprameya. What does Aprameya mean here? The unlimitedly powerful Lord. And why is he Aprameya? Because immediately from a distant place he appeared. Immediately. Unlimitedly powerful. He's on his own planet and immediately he appears. The Lord, although a transcendental to all material modes, still surpassed all the qualities of the sons of Aditi, known as the Adityas. The Lord appeared as the youngest son of Aditi, and because he surpassed all the planets of the universe, he is the supreme personality of Godhead. On the pretense of asking for a measurement of 3 footsteps of land, he took away all the lands of Bali Maharaj. He asked simply because without begging, no authority can take one's rightful possessions. So you can't take something that belongs to someone unless you beg. So the Supreme Lord, on the pretense of asking, he begged for 3 footsteps of land, and he took away everything from Bali Maharaj. This light is not good. So this story is going to be very nice. And it's just such a wonderful pastime, this story of Vamanadeva. But the Lord comes and teaches different lessons on how we can become perfect. So the story of Bali Maharaj is that with faith he sacrificed everything. Because he asked for 3 steps of land. Vamana just asked for 3 steps of land. He was only a little dwarf. Brahman is also the incarnation of beauty. So he's such a beautiful, young-looking boy. But with inconceivable potency, the first two steps of the universe, the first two steps he took pierced the universe. And his foot broke through the universe, and the celestial Ganges came over his feet. And then he asked for one more step of land, and Balimarj had nothing. And therefore, he said, I can only offer you my head. So Prabhupada's going to discuss in the next purport extensively that this is actually the process of Krishna consciousness. That for Krishna to give himself, he has to take away everything from us that has no relationship to him. Therefore, when a devotee is in a situation where Krishna is taking away everything from him, we can understand that what's really happening is Krishna is giving him everything. Although at the time that it's happening, if we have any attachment, we feel like we're losing, but actually we're gaining. Because Krishna wants to give himself. But he can't give himself if our heart is filled with attachment. And therefore that's his special mercy. So by giving everything to the cause of the Lord, one does not lose anything, but he gains everything that he could not otherwise expect. This is a fact. The only great jewel that we want is bhakti in our heart. Because we're actually after pleasure, but what is pleasure? Pleasure is Krishna's potency. And what is that potency? Ladini Shakti. And what's the essence of Ladini Shakti? It's love of Godhead. So there's actually no pleasure outside of love of Godhead. So to have that pleasure, sometimes Krishna has to distance us from our attachments so that we can give them up. And he does that when he feels that we have sufficient sukriti to get his mercy. Balimarj, who put it on his head, the water washed from the lotus feet of the Lord, did not think of anything besides his promise, in spite of being forbidden by his spiritual master. The king dedicated his own body to fulfill the measurement of the Lord's third step. For such a personality, even the kingdom of heaven, which he conquered by his strength, was of no value. So actually, there is no value. When you get Krishna, then you automatically lose taste for everything else. This is one of the qualities of pure devotional service. There's six qualities of pure devotional service. Even at the platform of practicing sadhana bhakti, if it's practiced purely, then the happiness even of sadhana bhakti surpasses other types of happiness. And when you get to the platform of prema bhakti, the happiness is called sandrandana visheshatma. Sandra means the happiness is very dense. It's very wonderful. And Rupa Goswami gives a verse, and he explains that if you take the happiness of impersonal Brahman, which is far greater than bhukti, or material pleasure, and you multiply it by the highest conceivable number, that will not equal a fraction of a drop of the happiness of prema bhakti. So Krishna wants to give us prema bhakti. And one who understands that, then nothing in this world actually has any value. He can give up anything in this world to get that. And this is what happened to Bali Maharaj. By his great sacrifice of giving up everything, he gained the transcendental favor of the Lord, which is to have a place in Vaikuntha Loka. So he didn't lose, but you don't lose by sacrificing to Krishna. You only gain. One time, Bob Cohn, Brahmatirtha, the book Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. So somehow or other, in New York City, I don't know how he arranged it, his mother met my mother. So I forgot what he's saying. He told me, he said, because he told me he was always, you know, he'd always do something for his mother. He said, giving to your mother is like giving to Krishna. When you give to Krishna, whatever little you get back 100 times. Bali Marj by gain, in other words, when the Lord snatches away one's hard-earned material possessions and favors one with his personal transcendental service for eternal life, bliss, and knowledge, such taking away by the Lord should be considered a special favor upon the pure devotee. Understand it, that if you're in a situation where the Supreme Lord is taking away, it's actually Krishna saying, I want to give. And if you react in a spiritual way, then you get the jewel of his service. Material possessions, however alluring they may be, cannot be permanent possessions. Therefore, one has to voluntarily give up such possessions, or one has to leave such possessions by the time of quitting his body. The sane man knows that all material possessions are temporary, and the best use of such possessions is to engage them in the service of the Lord. So there's a verse in the Bhagavatam, an intelligent man will sacrifice the temporary for the permanent. So this is what we're doing. We're sacrificing something that we have to give up anyway. And when we do that, then we get Krishna's service. And this was the example of Bali Maharaj. One who possesses more in this material world, in the shape of land, children, society, friendship, and wealth, possesses these things for the time being. One cannot possess all this illusory paraphernalia created by Maya permanently. Such a possessor is more illusion in the matter of self-realization. Therefore, one should possess less or nothing so that one may be free from artificial prestige. This is it. Material possessions. The whole material world is expanding from the platform of the Mahatattva. The Mahatattva is the collective false ego. So it starts subtle from the false ego. So everything in this material world, from the false ego comes the modes of nature, then come the objects of the senses. So the material world is actually expanding from false ego. So the material world, as it advances, as material civilization advances, it's advancing in the facility to make you forget that you're God's servant. So when you possess so many different things, they'll have the impact on your consciousness that I am the controller and that I am the enjoyer. And that this situation that I am in is real. This is the illusion of family life. The illusion of family life that it creates in the consciousness, the idea that this is one's eternal position as a member of this family. And therefore one acts on the bodily concept of life. And pure devotional service means that you have to give up acting according to these designations, these upadis. And you have to start acting on the platform of the soul. Therefore, the verse given in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is Sarva Padi Vinir Muktam Tatpura Twain Anirmalam Rishikena Rishikena Sevanam Bhakti Uchite. What is Bhakti called? Sarva Padi Vinir Muktam. You got to give up Sarva Upadi. All designations. All conceptions that are external to the self. All conceptions that put you in a particular place in this material world. And therefore, by surrounding oneself with material paraphernalia, one increases his designations in this world. So therefore, when the Supreme Lord is kind, he puts us in a situation where we possess less. So this is the point. To know exactly the permanency of its spiritual existence, one must voluntarily practice possessing less or the minimum to maintain one's material existence without difficulty. So by living simply, you experience the permanence. You experience the soul. And then Prabhupada in the purport describes how the Vedas describe different types of civilizations, the civilization of the senses, the civilization of the mind, the civilization of the intelligence, and the civilization of the soul. The civilization of the soul is the Srimad Bhagavatam, because the nature of the soul is pure devotional service. The civilization of the intelligence is Bhagavad Gita, because Bhagavad Gita deals primarily with fixing up the intelligence in Krishna's service. Those who have attained the comforts of material civilization made for sense gratification should try to attain the kingdom of God by following the footsteps of Vali Maharaj, who in exchange has acquired material strength, adopting the process of bhakti yoga as recommended in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the example of Vali Maharaj. There's 9 processes of devotional service: Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam, Vandanam, Parasevanam. So the last process is Atmanivedanam, that you give up everything completely. That's one practice. You surrender everything to Krishna. And the example of that is Bali Maharaj. Prabhupada said these are the most difficult processes. There's even one process in Atmanivedanam where one gives up the false ego. In other words, a person says, I don't care if I'm a human being or an animal, or I don't care whatever my identification is. I just want to serve you. No concern. Atmanivedanam, giving up everything. So you give up everything, but you get more. O Narada, you were taught about the science of God and his transcendental loving service by the personality of Godhead. In his incarnation of Hamsa Avatar, he was very pleased with you due to your intense proportion of devotional service. He explained unto you lucidly the full science of devotional service, which is understandable by persons who are souls surrendered unto Lord Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead. Can you get me that yellow flashlight there? This light's going out. I'm going to have to. So this is Narada. He's also incarnation, Shaktive Shabata. Shaktivesh. So here is an incarnation, Hamsa Avatar. In Nimbark Sampradaya, there Ishtadev is Hamsa Avatar. Of course, Nimbark. But their incarnation is Hamsa Avatar. And here also Narada, he was instructed by him. And Prabhupada said that Narada is the incarnation of how to practice devotional service. So the preliminary qualification for entering devotional service is that you have to want to become a devotee. That's the preliminary qualification to get Krishna's mercy. And this is why Hamsa Avatar instructed Narada Muni. The word here given in the purport is Vividha Bhavena. Because he had developed Bhavena. He had developed Bhava. Bhava means an intense desire to give Krishna pleasure. This is your qualification for understanding the science of devotional service. He learned Bhagavatam from him. And Bhagavatam means, the Prabhupada explains that in the purport, it's the science of God and his devotional service. It's the science of Bhagavan, it's the science of Bhakta, it's the science of Bhakti. And it's understandable for souls like Narada Muni who are Vasudeva Sharana. those who are surrendered unto Lord Vasudeva, they can understand. And therefore, Prabhupada quotes from the Bhagavad Gita 7:19. What is the qualification for coming to devotional service? Bahunam janmanam ante gyanavam mam papadyate vasudeva savam samahatma sadhuru. When one, after many, many births of cultivating knowledge, he surrenders unto Vasudeva, unto Krishna. This is the single qualification. It's just our desire. There's no material qualification for devotional service. We have a right for devotional service because it's our relationship with Krishna. Just like if you're born into a particular, if you're a mother and you have a child, then what is your qualification for serving your child? If you have a child, what is your qualification? Do you have to be rich? Do you have to be learned? Do you have to be austere? No. You have a relationship. Once you have a relationship with someone, then you have the right to engage in that relationship. So we, by nature, have a relationship with Krishna. We are his servants. And therefore, there's no material qualification to serve Krishna. We just have to do it. And there's one verse in the Skanda Purana, or just as one can take the devotional service, just as one can take bath in the month of Magh. Magh is this month, cold. Is there any qualification for taking bath in the Jamuna? You just have to want to do it. So there's no qualification for serving Krishna. You just have to want to do it. So this is the example of Narada Muni. And Krishna appears in one way or another to those devotees who please him by their intense devotional service. Because Krishna is a person. And the nature of a person, and he's the supreme person. So the nature of a person is that he reciprocates in relationship. If you have a friend and you serve him, then he's a good friend if he serves you, and he serves you even more than you deserve. But if you serve him and help him and he doesn't reciprocate, what do you say? You say he's impersonal. So Krishna is the supreme person. And therefore, he reciprocates wonderfully with our love. He becomes pleased by our service. That's what a person is. A person reciprocates and is pleased when someone engages in his relationship. Relationship means love. If there's a mother and a child, and the child is a faithful child, then because the mother has served the child, then the child loves the mother and is willing to do anything for the mother. Similarly, if the child has served the mother nicely and the mother is pleased, she's willing to do anything for the child. So we have a loving relationship with Krishna. So here, he's understandable. He gives himself to those people who are surrendered to him and serve him. As the incarnation of Manu, the Lord became the descendant of the Manu dynasty and ruled over the miscreant kingly order, subduing them by his powerful wheel weapon. Undeterred in all circumstances, his rule was characterized by his glorious fame, which spread all over the three lokas and above them to the planetary system of Satyaloka, the topmost in the universe. So this is other types of incarnations. These are called Manus. So there are 14 Manus in a day of Brahma. Manu means lawgivers. They're also like Swayambhuva Manu. They're like the emperors. But they're not the emperors of a planet. They're emperors of the universe. So in one day of Lord Brahma, there are 14 Manus. A day of Lord Brahma is 1,000 yuga cycles. A yuga cycle is 4,300,000 years. So
in one day, actually it's 12 hours of Brahma, there's 1,000 yuga cycles. So there's 14 manus in a day. So that means 14 times 4,300,000, there's like 14 times 60. Yeah. There's like 60 yuga cycles in a life. No, actually, there's 72 yuga cycles. No, it's 14 into 1,000. Okay, I got it now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 71. So, Manu rules for 71 yuga cycles. Okay. Now, we'll discuss tomorrow. Anyway, it's very nice, then, the discussion of Dandantari. That's the medical science. There's a relationship between the body and the soul. So Krishna in the Vedas provides all knowledge that we need to keep the body and soul together for the higher endeavor of self-realization. So all knowledge is ultimately coming to Krishna from Krishna, so there's Dandantari. Anyway, I think we're stopping at a good point. Tomorrow we discuss Ram and Krishna. We'll continue. The Lord, in his incarnation of Dhanvantari, very quickly cures the diseases of the ever-diseased living entities simply by his fame personified. And only because of him do the demigods achieve long lives. Thus the personality of Godhead becomes ever glorified. He extracted a share from the sacrifices, and it is he only who inaugurated the medical science or the knowledge of medicine in the universe, purport. As stated in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, everything emanates from the ultimate source of the personality of Godhead. It is therefore understood in this verse that medical science or knowledge in medicine was also inaugurated by the personality of Godhead in his incarnation, Dhanvantari. And thus the knowledge is recorded in the Vedas. The Vedas are the source of all knowledge, and thus knowledge in medical science is also there for the perfect cure of the diseases of the living entity. The embodied living entity is diseased by the very construction of his body. The body is the symbol of diseases. The disease may differ from one variety to another, but disease must be there, just as there is birth and death for everyone. So by the grace of the personality of Godhead, not only are diseases of the body and mind cured, but also the soul is relieved of the constant repetition of birth and death. The name of the Lord is also called Bhavau Shadi, or the source of curing the diseases of material existence.
Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Vritam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Now, what I'd like to do is just go a little bit right to the end of the chapter. Where, see if I can find it. Yeah.
where Vermas sums up what he's been doing, why he's been explaining these incarnations. And he explains, O Narada, although the potencies of the Lord are unknowable and immeasurable, he wanted to know, Marge Prickett wanted to know from Sukadeva Goswami about the process of creation. That means he wanted to know about the Lord's potencies. Narada Muni wanted to know from Lord Brahma about the process of creation. That means he wanted to know about his potencies. The Lord's potencies, Parashya Shaktir Vividhayasi, they're unlimited, they're unmeasurable. And therefore, the conclusion of all the study of the Lord's potencies is that we should Shravanam Kirtanam. We should chant and hear about Krishna. And that's the best way for transcendental knowledge to come in the heart. So this is at the conclusion of listening to all the incarnations. He says, O Narada, although the potencies of the Lord are unknowable and immeasurable, still we, because we are all surrendered souls, we know how he acts through his Yogamaya potency, because we're surrendered souls. And similarly, the potencies of the Lord are also known to the all-powerful Shiva, Prahlad Maharaj, Swayambhuva, the sons and daughters of Priyadvata, Uttanapad, Akuti, Devahuti, Anga, Dhruva, Muchakunda, Janaka, Raghu, Ambarish, Vanti Dev, Bhishma, Bali, Subhari, Devala, etc., Shukadev, Arjuna, Vidura, etc., etc. So this is obviously what's happening. He's just describing the Lord's, his avatars. Remember, again, there were two incarnations. One incarnation creating the world, and the other entering into the world. Both creations, both functions of the Supreme Lord are singularly for the enlightenment of the conditioned souls. Of course, he has internal reasons for appearing. We describe that. In the Kurma avatar, he was also had an itch on his back, and he also wanted to polish his jewels. But we see. So we're reading how it's such a theme. A theme means a concept that connects things, even though they appear unrelated. Just like if you have a book, what's the theme? Like the Bhagavatam, there's so many subjects. There's calculation of time from the atom. There's the rasa dance, there's kings, there's histories, there's so many things discussed, but what's the theme? What's the concept that relates everything? Ete chamsakala pumsa Krishna's tu bhagavan swayam. That Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. So what, there's a theme in the material world, whether it's good or evil, whatever happens, the theme in the material world is that everything is moving for the enlightenment of the conditioned souls. That's why Krishna has this world. So we see these incarnations, they come and assist in that function by helping to regulate the creation. But more important than regulating the creation, by performing various wonderful pastimes when they do so, so that the conditioned souls will have subject matter for hearing. As we mentioned before, this is the basis of bhakti yoga, is focusing the consciousness on Krishna, which gives us attachment of bhakti in the heart. And a focusing of our attention on Krishna only happens when we hear about him. And therefore, Krishna appears in this world specifically to give us subject matter to hear about him. So here we'll hear about Dhanvantari. He gave medical science. So Krishna is regulating all aspects of the creation. So medical science is also related to self-realization and enlightenment. As one sadhu once told me, bait nahi TK, then seer nahi TK. If stomach is not good, then head is not good. Therefore, you see, in most religious institutions, there's a lot of effort given to the kitchen. Because there's actually such a relation between the health. So here he comes for that purpose. And we also think of his kindness. We all like doctors if they're good. The mercy. When the ruling administrators, who are known as the Kshatriyas, turned astray from the path of the absolute truth, being desirous to suffer in hell, the Lord in his incarnation as the sage Parashuram uprooted those unwanted kings who appeared as thorns of the earth. Thus he thrice, seven times, uprooted the Kshatriyas with his keenly sharpened chopper. So all leaders have a responsibility, Prabhupada said, to lead the citizens towards God realization. This is essential for all human beings. And then it says, it is the duty of the father, spiritual master, ultimately the state, to take up the responsibility in leading the citizens to the end. So therefore, when there's a discrepancy in the leadership, and they're not leading the citizens in God realization, then Krishna comes. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarshio viduhu. That, what is the rest, Mother Narayani? And what does that translation mean? So when it's lost, Krishna reappears. Just like I say, I try to stick on the essence of the points, not but a little story entertainment never harms as long as it doesn't stray. But just whenever I hear that Evam Parampara Praptam, I remember Pradyumna coming out of Prabhupada's room. And Pradyumna was in Prabhupada's room when what's the name of that sannyasi? Parivrajakacharya Maharaj. He was a sannyasi who was preaching in Iran, and he was teaching yoga classes, and he was getting up into the family of the Shah of Iran to the extent that the daughter of the Shah of Iran came to the Krishna Balaram Mandir and took darshan. When they drove up, came in. So when he came in, Prabhupada was very pleased with him, and Pradyumna was telling this, and Pradyumna said, when Prabhupada saw him, because he was a sannyasi, which is like a rishi or a saint, but he was preaching among the kings, Pradyumna told me, Prabhupada said, evam parampara praptam, imam rajarshio viduhu. I remember Pradyumna said like that, viduhu. I saw him this summer, Pradyumna. A wealth of knowledge. It was actually like one of the most amazing. I asked him what this term chitta vritti means from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. First, to keep him in the room where I was, he was so paranoid. Sit down, Pradyumna, sit down. I gotta go, sit down. He was at heart. I was visiting Advaita. Advaita was the Sankirtan leader here, who's now a professor in Harvard. And he teaches, his two courses this year were Krishna and commentaries of Bhagavad Gita. He was our Sankirtan leader here, Advaita. So what happened is he invited me over for Pasadam, and Pradyumna was there. But Pradyumna was in and out, and Pradyumna was attending this conference. So, you know, he was so, you know how he is. And I just asked him that question, can you explain the term chitta vritti? And, I mean, it was like so wonderful. He got so enlivened that at the end, he was paranoid at the beginning, at the end when he was going, he gave a dollar donation to my brahmachari assistant. brahmachari, you know? And then when he was going out the door, he was quoting verses about the sannyasis. in Sanskrit as he was out the door. I mean, he has that side of him that's so cultured, because Sanskrit actually means culture, and you can see, even though he's so forgetful sometimes, he's so, but there's no one I've seen that, I mean, no matter where I've seen him, in the Upper Bronx or something, he takes out of the back pocket, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's translation or something, or several times I got to meet him, but he explained it. He started quoting Patanjali Sutras, where the chitta means consciousness, and vritti means how it's transformed. So he said, and he started going on and on, and then he was quoting so many things he said was so amazing. And he quoted so many verses on this because he said, the purpose of Krishna consciousness is to clean the chaita or the mind. And then he went chaito, dharpana, marjanam. He started quoting. So I can give a whole class on what he said one time, but he explained it means psyche. And he explained how your psyche is created according to Patanjali Sutras. There's five different aspects of how the consciousness becomes transformed. Anyway, it was very interesting. But here, it's the responsibility. Another story, and I just happened to be, where Prabhupada said, the duty of father's spiritual master to take up the responsibility of leading the citizens towards this end. We met Prabhupada, and we asked Prabhupada, he said, what's the purpose of Gurukula? And so many people gave different answers. I remember Dayananda said 9 things. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Prabhupada. And someone said 4 things, manmanabhavad makto, madhm. And then Prabhupada was thinking, he really wanted the essence. He said, guru nasasyat, swajani nasasyat, pita nasasyat. And in this verse here, don't become a father, don't become a spiritual master, don't become a husband, don't become, any type of responsibility unless you could liberate your charge. So here the word given in the purport that Prabhupada hones in on is brahmojita patas. And it means those who have given up the path of Brahman, the ultimate truth. Those who have given or deviated from the path. Whether it is the Brahmins or whether it's the Kshatriyas, and they deviate from the path, then Krishna comes. So he came as Parashuram because the Kshatriyas had deviated. And it said that he destroyed them 21 times. I guess that means he killed them all, and then their children grew up and he killed them all, and the whole night, and Prabhupada explains how they went all around the world. Due to his causeless mercy upon all living entities within the universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, along with his plenary extensions, appeared in the family of Maharaj Ishvaku as the lord of his internal potency, Sita. Under the order of his father, Maharaj Dasarath, he entered the forest and lived there for considerable years with his wife and younger brother. Ravana, who was very materially powerful, with his 10 heads on his shoulders, committed a great offense against him and was thus ultimately vanquished. Somehow or other, when you hear Ram, you feel, Raghupati Raghava Raja Ram, Patita Pavana Sita. I'm just thinking, it's Hanuman. You just think of Hanuman. So here Prabhupada is discussing. Kalasya, he appeared with his plenary expansions. And Prabhupada said, as some people say, that his brothers, Ram's brothers, are ordinary people. So Prabhupada typically says Kalasya. Kalasya means with his plenary extensions. So these are his plenary extensions. And here also, Prabhupada also discusses the word Kalesha. Having problems with light. I have to somehow find a solution. Kalesha means his... Wait a second. Oh yeah, right after. Okay, Kalesha means the Lord of all potencies. So the Lord of all potencies means that he comes with his internal potency, Sita, and he's the Lord of Sita. Sita also, it means the goddess of fortune, and therefore Prabhupada talks how The lesson is the materialists who try to take the goddess of fortune, who try to take the wealth that belongs to the Supreme. You learn lessons from Ramana, from Ramayana, that the policy of exploiting the nature of the Lord without acknowledging the supremacy of the Supreme Lord is the policy of Ravana. And Prabhupada says, Lord Ramachandra is a full incarnation with six opulences in full, and he's therefore mentioned in this verse as Kalesha, or master of all opulence. So this is mini Ramayana. The personality of Godhead Ramachandra, being aggrieved for his distant, intimate friend Sita, glanced over the city of the enemy Ravana with red-hot eyes like those of Hara, who wanted to burn the kingdom of heaven. The ocean trembled in fear and gave him his way because its family members, the aquatics, like the sharks, snakes, and crocodiles, were being burnt by the heat of the angry, red-hot eyes of the Lord. So Prabhupada discusses that everything comes from the Supreme Lord. Because here the word is Rosha. Rosha Sushona. In anger. Sushona, red hot. Dristya, by his glance, his red hot glance in anger. Prabhupada says how the impersonalists, we see havoc in this red hot sentiment of the Lord. Because they want to see negation and perfection. The Prabhupada said this sentiment, everything comes from the Lord, but it's not mundane. Otherwise, by this red hot glance, how can the great ocean tremble in fear and burn? So he has sentiment, but it's not ordinary. While Ravana was engaged in the battle, the trunk of the elephant which carried the king of heaven, Indra, broke in pieces. Having collided with the chest of Ravana, and the scattered broken parts illuminated all directions. Ravana therefore felt proud of his prowess and began to loiter in the midst of the fighting soldiers, thinking himself the conqueror of all directions. But his laughter, overtaken by joy, along with his very air of life, suddenly ceased. With the tingling sound of the bow of Ramachandra, the personality of God, it purport, however powerful a living being may be, when he is condemned by the God, no one can save him. And similarly, however weak one may be, if he is protected by the Lord, no one can annihilate him. I will just tell one short story. Somehow, in one sense, these verses are difficult to lecture on because they're each separate, and I like to connect things and get that dynamicism. But I always tell this story in Gita Nagari. There's one very advanced devotee. He takes care of the cows there. He's an older black man, and his name is Bali. And he's so simple, but he's so pure, and he says things that are very, very realized. So the example I give is that when Bhaktivedanta Swami first met him, he was a taxi driver in Washington. So Bhaktivedanta, one day he picked him up and he was driving Bhaktivedanta. He said, "What's that hole in the window?" And this Bali said, "Well," and he's really like a southern black, he's about 55, 60. He said, "Well, this morning," he said, "one guy came to my window and he put a gun to the window and he said, 'I want your money.' And I looked at him and I told him, 'If Krishna wants to save you, no one can kill you. And if Krishna wants to kill you, no one can save you.'" You know, I mean, he's so realized. I just go, it just happens, this is the way. And another story with him, so he finally came to India, so I took him on parikram, but he came with this older black lady, 75. Her name is Mother Indrani, and she has so much like bhakti, and I mean, she's just all in tears all the time, and she's very like stately and wise, but she has arthritis, so she never thought she can go on any parikram when she was here. But then I took the group and it rained, so I had to go by the bus. So I took the bus, and it was an amazing parikram because we went right by Govinda Kund and it was raining,
And it was all Krishna Katha because we never got out. Mm-hmm. So I was just so much Krishna Katha. So I started to explain how Govardhan and this lady Indrani was out in the rain, you know, looking at Govardhan saying, my Lord, you know, I never thought I'd see, you know, she was just like it all in tears, you know, it was like amazing. So then this guy, I was explaining how in Govardhan, it's like Jagannath Puri. When you're in Puri, wherever you are, you feel the presence of Jagannath. They said, in Govardhan, wherever you are, you feel the presence of Govardhan. I said, Bali, I said, just like when you're in the barn with the cows in Gitanagari, don't you feel the presence of Radha Damodar? And he looks at me, he said, I feel the presence of Radha Damodar here, you know. And they were, wow, Bali, it's just like his realizations are just too high for everyone. So that's a little commentary on it. Ravana, so powerful. But if Krishna wants to kill you, no one can save you. When the world is overburdened by the fighting strength of kings who have no faith in God, the Lord, just to diminish the distress of the world, descends with his plenary portion. The Lord comes in his original form with beautiful black hair. And just to expand his transcendental glories, he acts extraordinarily. No one can properly estimate how great he is. So the wonderful thing of the Srimad Bhagavatam is that, and you'll see this through in, there's such a mixture of lila and tattva. Such a wonderful mixture. It'll happen at the end of this second canto, you'll see this there. Marge Prickett asked so many questions, and then one of the questions he asked was about time, and he asked about the universal form. And again, Sutta Goswami said that beyond the universal form is Krishna. So we should chant here about Krishna. Then the next question, he said, now I will answer your next question about, I'll answer your next question about time, kulpa vikulpa, mahakulpa. And then Shonaka Rishi said, wait a second, you just said that beyond the universal form is Krishna. So let's hear about Krishna. What happened when Vidura met? You know, so it went right back in the third canto into the Leela. Vidura meets Uddhava. No, you just got this heavy dose of creation. Vidura met Uddhava. And then Uddhava explained the Vrindavan pastimes to him. And then Uddhava in the middle stopped and said, wait a second. I cannot explain anymore because it is against the etiquette. Maitreya Muni is nearby and he's much more senior. So then he went to Maitreya Muni and then it got back into creation. So it's so interestingly created. The Bhagavatam, we discussed that a little bit with Sukadeva Goswami's instructions to Maharaj Prickett, how even psychologically he was reading his mind that he may be discouraged because he only had 7 days left to live. So he told him about better a full moment of consciousness than a life spent in sense gratification. Better a muhurtam. And then he explained, well, King Kadvanga, he only lived a muhurtam, so don't become discouraged. You can become perfect. So it's so interesting how if you just hear tattva, you can become dry. If you hear all lila before you're prepared, you can become sentimental. So it weaves in the tattva and the lila. So perfectly, in such a perfect way, that you see Krishna behind everything. So here it's so nice. Again, Maharaj Prickett is getting to hear about Krishna. And we remember how attached Maharaj Prickett is to Krishna and why he can't give it all at once. Because even when Sukadeva Goswami came to Maharaj Prickett, Maharaj Prickett just looked in amazement and he just thought, he said, I am not qualified. I explained this before, but because my grandfather, Arjuna, is the son of Krishna's aunt, therefore I'm being benedicted. Just because I'm in the family of someone who has intimate relationships with him, I have no qualification. And then we described before how Shonaka Rishi, when he wanted the Krishna Katha to continue, he stood up and he told Sita Goswami, please continue. I want to hear about Maharaj Prickett, who's a Maha Bhagavat. And from his early days, he was hearing about Krishna. He was playing with dolls of Krishna. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was explaining that
when he was young, he was hearing, I guess, the Lok Pramana. He was hearing the talk of Krishna because it was Hastinapur. It was near Vrindavan for Krishna's pastimes. And Sridhar Swami said the family had deities of Krishna. So it's woven in so nicely. So here it says again, Kalasya. And Prabhupada said that means he came with Kalasya. Kalasya means the full plenary portion. Ete chamsa kala pumsa. Kala amsa. Kala is full and amsa is part of that. So Kalasya means Balaram. He came with Balaram. And then also the word is discussed, Sita Krishna. Acacia, with such hairs that are not only beautiful, but also black. So it's so beautiful, his beauty. And Prabhupada discusses in the purport that this is actually inconceivable, because on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Krishna was 125 years, but his hair was still beautiful, and therefore, it's very difficult to understand Krishna by the limited sense perception. And therefore the word here is, he's Janu Palaksha Marg. For the people in general, it's the path which is rarely seen. Because he has inconceivable potencies. And therefore, it's, Prabhupada quotes, Naham Prakashya Sarva, that Yoga Maya, he reserves the right of not being exposed to anyone and everyone. Perception is not just a matter of the senses. Perception is also a matter of the mind. Perception is also a matter of the intelligence. Just like if you went back 500 years ago in a village and you showed this to someone, can you say that they're seeing it if they don't have the intelligence of what it is? Or if someone's speaking or you're chanting the holy name, but your mind is thinking of something else, are you experiencing the holy name? So the consciousness, there must be the senses, there must be the mind, and there must be the intelligence. And therefore it's very important in the practice of Krishna consciousness that the intelligence must be fixed up. That's why this is what Pradyumna says. One of the things he said, he was going on and on through the scriptures, Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur commentaries and a whole, and then this professor from Harvard, because he's studying, he got into it, and I was explaining things, and it was just so enlivening. And then Pradyumna, and he said, you have to have the chant, the holy name at Nama Bas, you must have Sambandha Gyan. And then he explained, what is Sambandha Gyan? Because Sambandha Gyan means the knowledge of our relationship, but what relationship? Prabhupada explains our relationship from Krishna. But in the complete sense, Prabhupada explained, and Pradyumna is explaining this, Sambandha Gyan means matter, spirit, and the controller of both, and their interrelationship. In other words, you must know what the relationship of the living entity is to Krishna and what his living relationship is to the material world. You have to know what Krishna's relationship is to the living entity and to the material world. You have to know what the material world's relationship is to Krishna and the living entity. That's Sambandha Gyan. So we have to have Sambandha Gyan. If you don't, then what is your chanting? Your chanting is that Krishna is matter. And then you're distanced from the holy name. We don't understand that in our spiritual practices, and this is also in the second canto when they describe the indirect process, the contemplative yogi and how he becomes purified. It became so clear that in a spiritual process, the buddhi has to be fixed. The intelligence has to be fixed. It's not that you're chanting, you make the mind blank of all conceptions. You have to have the proper conception. You have to have the proper idea. The intelligence has to be fixed. So this is the path here. So Krishna cannot just be seen easily, and he becomes inconceivable simply because he appears ordinary, simply because he appears beautiful, simply because he appears accessible. In relationship. So here it's described there. And he quotes also from the sixth canto. This is very nice too. How not only Krishna, but his associates, like the Vishnu Dutas when they came, they remained eternally beautiful, eternally young. Okay, and then finally the question is why the Lord who is omnipotent comes here to diminish the burden created upon the world. He doesn't need, Prabhupada, certainly the Lord does not need to come here personally in such purposes. So why does he come? Just to diminish the burden of the world? He can fire up Bill Clinton. Certainly the Lord, but why? He descends to exhibit his transcendental activities in order to encourage his pure devotees who want to enjoy life by chanting the glories of the Lord. And then Bhagavad Gita 9:13 and 14. Satatam kirtiyanto mam yatantas tajadhavitaha. This is what Mahatmas, great souls, do. They chant and hear about Krishna. So he takes all Vedic literature meant to turning one's attention towards the Lord and his transcendental activities. Thus, the activities of the Lord and his dealings with the worldly people create a subject matter for discussion by his pure devotees. One more Harvard story. And if you can't go to Harvard, you can buy a t-shirt. So, I'm just quoting all my... So there's another friend I had that went to Harvard, and that was Garuda. And he's a very nice scholar. He just wrote his PhD thesis on the Rasa Dance. It's supposed to be amazing. Treatise. When that comes out, it'll be wonderful. And he was in a lecture of some distinguished scholar of Sanskrit. And he got up at the podium and he said, there is no mention in any of the Vedic literatures of a Vaishnav society. You'll never see in Bhagavad Gita any place that mentions a Vaishnav society. So he was thinking, you know, I got to follow the etiquette, but am I going to allow this guy to get away with this? So then he very tactfully said, can you explain the verse, Machyatama Kata Prana Bodhiyantas Paraspara, that my devotees take pleasure in always enlightening and glorifying one another. So what does this mean? It seems like it's a Vaishnav society mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. So this is very nice. They explain Krishna. There is no doubt about Krishna's being the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, how is it possible for him to kill a giant demon like Putana? Tokyena by a child. Jitaharanan, killing a living being. Uluki Kaya, who assumed the giant body of a demon. How is it possible? And Trai Masikasya, of one who is only 3 months old, Pada, Shakata Apavrata. How did he turn over the cart with his leg? How is it possible to kill a giant demon like Putana when he was just on the lap of his mother, to overturn a cart with his leg when he was only 3 months old, to uproot a pair of Arjuna trees so high that they touched the sky when he was only crawling? All these activities are impossible for anyone other than the Lord himself. Really having problems with it. Oh, to Prabhupada, this is very interesting. He explained why the Lord did not expand. If the Putana expanded so huge, why didn't the Lord himself also expand with inconceivable potency? Then Prabhupada talked about Vatsalya Ras. That Krishna comes really just to satisfy his devotees. So, I explain, this point is very easy. The love of a mother, each love that one has with Krishna has a different flavor. For example, the love of a servant for the master is, the love is you are my maintainer and protector. That's the bhava. That's the bhava, if you think. And the love of the mother for the child is I am your maintainer and protector. Her love is the mercy, and therefore she never likes to see the child as capable. Even we see that, even if someone becomes old, then the mother never likes to see the child as capable. I'll just tell like one small funny story about this, but this is what happened is the shelter van visited my house because I was staying at my mother's house. So then they actually had to go, but I had to speak to one of the members before they went, Parmananda. So I had to like come in the room and I was talking to him. So the other people, they were late, so they were talking amongst themselves, well, what we should do, you know, because some are disciples. You know, Maharaj is in there. I mean, we don't want to disturb him, but we have to go. So my mother heard about it. She says, well, I don't have to, like, you know, boom, 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 boom. Boom, you know, like, open the door, you know. She was, her Vatsalya Ras was not disturbed by their awe and reverence, but, what? They never see. Although, you know, your husband told me that even though the mother has many sons, because he's a guru, she has pictures of him all over the house.
Well, he's Jewish. You know, the star in the family.
Yeah, I can.
Whoever that son is.
No, I can imagine.
If he's a guru, then okay.
I can imagine. This is a real intoxicated day. I can't. Yeah, and then he Prabhupada described that Krishna satisfies everyone. We'll do another verse. Then also when the cowherd boys and their animals drank the poison water of the river Jamuna, and after the Lord in his childhood revived them by his merciful glance just to purify the water of the river Jamuna, he jumped into it as if playing and chastised the venomous Kaliya snake, which was lurking there, its tongue emitting waves of poison. Who can perform such Herculean tasks with the Lord? So these are just sutras. But you can imagine Maharaj Cricket, because when you know Krishna's pastimes, it's just like Mozart. When Mozart would hear a symphony, he'd hear the whole thing at once. You know, he'd hear the whole thing at once. So when you know Krishna's pastimes, even if you hear just one story, the whole thing at once comes. And the whole thing at once comes means all the different moods of love that actually were experienced there. When we go on Prikram and we go to a place, what we remember is the mood of love that's experienced by Krishna, devotee to Krishna, and Krishna to his devotee. So we remember this Kaliya pastime. How all the residents of Vrindavan, I will just tell this pastime. So Krishna, he came to the bank of the Jamuna after swallowing the forest fire. It was so hot. And they took water, and then he saw that his friends actually died or near died. And then Krishna revived them, and then he looked up and he saw that through the whole area, even the birds flying overhead were dropping, and poisonous gas was emanating from the Jamuna, and all the beautiful vegetation of Braj was just destroyed. So Krishna decided to see what was happening, and therefore he jumped upon this kadamba tree whose branch was hanging out into the river, which was the only tree that was living at the time. Some say it was because of Krishna's foot which brought it life, and others say that because Garuda wanted the Kaliya serpent killed, he put a drop of nectar there. So Krishna came out on the branch, and he tied his belt, and then flapped his arms like a wrestler. And then he jumped into the water, and when he jumped into the water, he started to bang with his hands. And it described that Kaliya was in the water, and he had a great mystic potency called Jal Siddhi.
that within water, he could create shapes out of water. So he was actually living in palatial water buildings, enjoying with the Nagaputnis. And then he heard the sound as if there was described a symphony of madungas. Even one madunga, when I used to stay in the Gurukul building, could drive me crazy. But if there was 100 madungas, so Kaliya's serpent, he came out, and then he got Krishna in his coils. And then it's described in Krishna book that every living entity in Vrindavan came to the bank of the Jamuna. And they described how it was possible. It described that it was possible because in Vrindavan, Krishna's footprints are a udipan for ecstatic love. It means they light one's ecstatic love. So his footprints are never covered by the residents of Vrindavan, so they could always see his path. So they all went there to the bank of the Jamuna. And when they saw Krishna in the coils, enwrapped in the coils of the demon, then what happened to their affection for him? The affection increased. When there's danger to the child, the mother's love increases. And that's why Krishna is performing these leelas or pastimes, because he's exchanging with the pleasure potency which is in the hearts of his devotees. He's the supreme enjoyer, but what is he enjoying? He's enjoying the love of the devotees. But Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, so he's enjoying a variety of flavors. He just doesn't enjoy, I use this expression, vanilla love of Godhead. There's so many flavors. He enjoys fraternal love in different varieties, conjugal love in different varieties, servitude. There's one servitude called Prabhuta Gyan, you are the Lord and Master. There's another servitude called Adrita Kriti, you are my boss. There's another one called Sharanagati, which is what Kaliya experienced.